Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Our show is going to consist of harvest updates, and we would love to hear how things are going on your farm. Maybe you're planting right now. Maybe you've been done with harvest for a while. You're working on other things. We'd love to know what's happening. And of course, if you have an agronomic question, our phone lines are open for that too. 844-44-AG-PHD.
All right, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag right away in the show here. But before we do, I'll just give you a quick rundown on what's happening right in our region of the United States. So we farm in southeast South Dakota, kind of right by where Minnesota, Iowa, and South Dakota all meet. We're about, I don't know, probably 20 miles from Iowa, 25, maybe 25 miles from Iowa and 20 miles from Minnesota. So we're not that far inside South Dakota. But anyway, around our area, we're probably 99% done with beans and 90% done with corn. So it's mostly done. It's way ahead of normal. And, you know, we saw this coming from clear back in June when the temperatures in June were really hot. And most people around here had planted 2 to 4 weeks earlier than normal on corn and beans. We expected that harvest is going to be done early, and it is. Corn was nice and dry this fall, so, I mean, things went quite smooth. Now, granted, we didn't have rain for 3.5 months or any real rain to speak of, but yields turned out surprisingly good. I would say average yield around here, but tremendous variability, more variability than we would ever normally see. So the low grounds where there was still some moisture, fantastic crop. The sandy soil, non-irrigated, and the hilltops, terrible. I mean, disaster. So if the whole fields were like that, it'd have been a pretty rough year. But anyway, averages turned out fairly good. And on our farm, we finished last week. So I'm happy that crop prices are going up. I'm happy that we at least got the yield we did, considering we didn't have a decent rain after July 6th. That was good. It was just a little bit better than what I thought it was going to be based on our dry and hot weather late in the season. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First question comes from Clay in central Missouri, who has some clay soils, by the way, that he's going to talk about here. He said, we've got a cattle farm. We also have a U-picket pumpkin patch, and we hold some fall festivals, mainly in October. Looking to improve our yields on the pumpkins. And I'm wondering, if I send you guys a soil sample, would fertility be my key to having higher yields? And could I get your opinions and suggestions?
Sure. Yeah, we would like to see the soil tests, and then we can kind of go from there. Now, in terms of pumpkins, I will say a lot of times where we see pumpkins raised is lighter soil irrigation, so it's a little bit different. You're not going to be able to hold nutrients like you can in a soil like we deal with an average cation exchange capacity of 20. So, I mean, it's going to require some application of fertility during the season, I'm going to assume, because most likely we're talking about a little lighter ground. But anyway, yeah, we'd love to look at your soil tests.
All right, thanks for the question, Clay. This one comes from Andrew in Northwest Pennsylvania. He said, I had some sorghum Sudan grass that I was taking for baleage, and I left this section of it to grow to seed or full maturity. Well, it looked like a jungle out there. I finally had to brush hog it. Next year, I'm going to be planting corn in that field. I'm wondering about nitrogen and if I'll need to apply more to deal with that residue. I normally put on 1/3 of my nitrogen at planting and 2/3 is at side dress. Should I be doing something this fall?
Fall, that's up to you if you want to. But the thing is, with lots of residue out in the field, then you want to be ahead of normal on nitrogen because you're going to get tie-up. And the tie-up isn't going to last forever. That nitrogen is going to come back available to you. It's just a question of, is it going to be a month? Is it going to be 3 months? What's it going to be? There is going to be tie-up, so just make sure you're putting ample nitrogen on early. And quite frankly, you might even need an extra 30 to 50 pounds just to overcome some of that nitrogen tie-up that you'll get in that residue. And hopefully that nitrogen will come available very late in the season or going into the next year.
right. Thanks for the question, Andrew, and good luck. Got this one from Ryan. He is in Northeast Kansas. He said, I'm thinking about applying some elemental sulfur before planting corn in 2021. We normally get around 30 inches or more of rainfall plus irrigation. Our soil's in the 10 to 20 CEC range. Wondering, will elemental sulfur become available for this year's corn crop? And when I'm choosing a product to use, how small should the particle size be if it's good quality elemental sulfur? Oh, and he said he's going to take a sample, put it in a jar of water, and wondering, good. Is there a certain length of time it needs to dissolve within in order to be considered good?
Okay, so I don't have exact answers to, well, it's got to be smaller than this. So, for example, like with lime, we really like it when it goes through a 100 mesh screen. A lot of times they'll even say 60 mesh is good enough. I like it when it goes through a 100 mesh. And then we know we've got very fine particle size. So, you know, you could maybe use that as a guideline. We've never done that with elemental sulfur exactly. But, yeah, he's got the right point down. The most important thing with elemental sulfur is also the most important thing with lime. It's how quickly is it going to break down? And a lot of that has to do with that particle size. So we want a very small particle size, and we want it to dissolve well in water. So what we generally will tell people is take, let's say, three different sources of elemental sulfur that you could possibly buy, put them each in a jar of water separately, and then every day just go shake them up and just kind of listen to that. I mean, we've had some elemental sulfur where a year later, seriously, a year later, you still shake that jar and it sounds like rocks in there. Well, that's not good. So anyway, I would just say the odds are high if you've got heat, you have 30 inches of annual precip, and you have a small size for your elemental sulfur, that at least a good portion of that is going to come available this year. But then the other factor to that is there is bacteria in the soil that will break that down and convert that over, so you have sulfate, the form that the plant's going to use. So you want to have good overall soil life. That means good drainage, hopefully at least halfway decent organic matter. But yeah, I'm optimistic it'll be available for this year. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're getting a harvest update on today's program, and our phone lines will be open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We would love to hear from you today. If you've got an agronomic question, that would be great too. We love trying to tackle those. You can also email them, radio@agphd.com. Let's head down to Missouri. We'll start off there. We've got Jeff online. Hopefully it's a little warmer in Missouri than it was here today. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Yourself?
Good, good. How is harvest going for your farm?
We got about 40 acres of beans left, and that's it. I'd say, you know, most people are on the downhill slide for sure. A little bit of corn left and probably more beans than corn in the area, but probably at least 75% of the beans out.
Awesome. Awesome. Is that ahead of schedule for your area or is that right on pace?
It's probably right on pace. Normally, most guys, we try to get done, you know, Halloween at time, which I'm not sure we're going to make that this year. It's had some snow earlier in the week and kind of maybe rain tonight a little bit and stuff, but, you know, the forecast looks pretty good after this. So.
Yeah, our forecast is improving a little bit, too, so hopefully we can get rid of some of the snow that's still lingering up here. Have you got field work to do after that? Do you do fertility work or tillage or anything?
Yeah, we'll work some ground, put on anhydrous, some dry fertilizer and spray. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of times we can work into December, so it depends on the year, but, yep. So, yeah, it's working well. So.
Now, you mentioned herbicide. Are you targeting winter annual weeds or perennials out there?
Yeah, winter annuals, henbit and maristail.
Are you mainly just burning them down with a 2,4-D or dicamba, or are you guys using residual herbicides that you're hoping will impact next year's crop?
Yes, yes, 2,4-D and Roundup, and then we put a residual in this year. I think we're going to try some Autumn Super maybe. Haven't used that before, but heard some good results. I don't know. You can use it on both corn and beans, I guess, so.
Yeah, there are a lot of new products out there, a lot of products that are getting more widely accepted with fall applications. We've seen pretty good results on a lot of these fall treatments of knocking weeds out and making life a whole lot easier next year.
Yeah, because if we don't, the maristail will start shooting, you know, when it's still wet in the spring, we can't spray, and then before you know it, it's 3 foot tall and you got a mess, so.
Yeah, it's been interesting in my lifetime just watching which weeds. We didn't used to worry so much about mare's tail, and I remember we'd see it, and we didn't even really care. Oh, yeah, I see one here and there, and then all of a sudden we reduced our tillage, and that changed the game real quick.
Yep, sure did.
Well, Jeff, good talking to you here. Good luck here as you finish up those last little bit of beans, and hope you have some good weather coming soon.
Yeah, thank you. You all too.
Yeah, thanks. Let's head out to California, which has been an interesting environment lately with fires and everything else going on. We've got Tony with us. Tony, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm doing all right. Everything's going okay, except for the fires, I guess.
Oh, no. How close are they to you?
Well, I have some chickens in Yucaipa, and the fires about a month ago, it got within 500, 1,000 feet of
the
barn.
Oh, my goodness.
Got really close, and luckily when it was getting really close, they sent all the air cranes over there in the fire department, and they really jumped on it. I was trying to figure out, do I open the barn doors and let the chickens run for it? You know, it was pretty scary.
Oh, yeah.
But also the smoke, they put it out luckily. I didn't know what I was going to wake up to the next morning. And then also the smoke, there's so much smoke in the air. Today I was harvesting pink lady apples. They're not that pink. They're mostly green. And my Fuji apples 2 weeks ago, they're pretty green as well, and they don't have the taste. So that's how we're breathing in all that smoke, but it's also affecting the apple harvest as well.
Yeah, I've talked to folks with vineyards out there, too. They've been talking about how it's impacting the quality of what's being produced. That is not good at all because there's really no fix to that.
No, it's a mess. And you have ash coming down everywhere, so you're breathing it in. I know we're all wearing a mask for the most part, or we're supposed to be, but it's just one thing after another. That's farming, right?
Well, that is just, oh my goodness, that's way beyond some of the challenges that we're used to facing in farming for sure. But all right, so talk to us about that then. You had big fires in the area. What is the forecast then in those areas? Are there just big areas where now you're worried about mudslides and those kinds of things, or are there other problems that are going to be coming?
Well, you know, we had the Santa Ana winds out there in Yucaipa where the chickens are. And it was just one big dust cloud. It was raining ash on us. I don't think we have to worry about mudslides. The slopes are really, they're not that steep. And luckily there's a big river basin. It's kind of over there by the Big Bear area.
Okay.
So it should be okay. I don't think we have to worry about that, luckily. And so it's okay. Just for right now, it's all right.
What did the arborist tell you about your trees? Is there a long-term impact on the trees, or is this something that as long as they didn't get caught up in the fire, they'll be able to grow through next year?
He said next year it should be fine, but he said everybody in the valley. I'm coming back from Dinuba, which is 20 miles south of Fresno right now, harvesting apples this morning, and he said everybody's dealing with it. I also have a farm in Newberry Springs, which is in the Mojave Desert, kind of out there by Barstow. And my pomegranates are pink inside. Actually, they're white. They're barely pink. They're not turning color either. So it's kind of playing havoc. And we do farmers markets about 25 a week. And once people taste these apples, they're not going to come back to buy anymore. I was just eating a couple of them, and it's like eating cardboard almost, unfortunately. So I think it's going to become feed.
Yeah, that is no good at all. Well, Tony, we're sure hoping that things turn around out there with the fires and everything else. I know next year everybody says, oh, next year will be a better year, but that doesn't make this year any easier to get through, especially with everything that's gone on through 2020. But really good talking to you. Really good to hear about what's going on, and hope you'll stay in touch here and let us know how it continues.
Absolutely. Veggies are all coming in now, and they're looking good. So, yeah.
Good.
Have a good day.
You bet. You too, Tony. Thank you so much. Brian, we get a number of questions about liming, and especially this time of year, a lot of folks are out soil sampling, trying to make some adjustments. This one comes from Chris, and he said, I've been listening to your podcast when I can. It's awesome. I'm addicted to it. Thank you for all the information. We've been doing some soil testing for years, but haven't done much with them other than a little flat rate liming. I recently started variable rate liming and plan to also variable rate my P and K in the spring. Wonder if you'd take a look at my soil samples. Let me know what you think about it. There are some recommendations on there for fertilizer too. How do you set up your recommendations? Is there anything else that you think my soils need? And just wondering why. I know there probably aren't enough samples. We'll work on that. But we're looking to build our soil as much as we can. It's going to be soybeans on this particular farm next year.
Okay, so I got 8 samples here. Soil pH range of 6.1 to 7.3. So I would put 0 lime on any of that if we're just talking corn and soybeans. Cation exchange capacity is 10 to 13. So we're talking medium textured soil. Now the organic matter is low. You're under 2% organic matter. So typically when we see lighter medium soil, this would be, and low organic matter, we'll say, you know, whatever you can do to reduce tillage, I'm probably going to be in favor of that, because we would like to try to build that soil up over time. I mean, honestly, if I had ground like that, I'd put it to continuous corn for 10 years. I'd try to build it up as much as I can. I'd go to strip till, and that's what I would do. Anyway, when I look at your soil tests here, your potassium is really, really low. So is your phosphorus. So, I mean, we talk every day on the show about all these other nutrients, and it's important to look at zinc and copper and boron and manganese, which, by the way, most of those I don't even see on your soil test here. But the most important ones are still N, P, and K. And when your P is low, your potassium is extremely low, those things have to get fixed right away. You know, beyond that, just I'd like to see levels on copper, boron, iron, manganese. So if we could see that at some point, that'd be great.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Panther, Credit Extreme, and Cheetah for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these challenging times, we know you're under pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Hey Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing, and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're getting harvest updates today. We'd love to hear how things are going on your farm, and our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Iowa. Get our friend Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG with us. Tony, how are things going around your farm?
I've got my stuff wrapped up for the season. When I look around the neighbors, there's not a lot of corn left in the neighborhood. I noticed one... We had a windstorm come through here, not the derecho everybody thinks about, but I noticed one neighbor still got one of his fields that was pretty badly damaged in that windstorm. It's probably half to two-thirds out there yet. Aside from that, nothing in my immediate location, although I've understood there's more like 10 miles, 15 miles to the west of me that is unharvested, but well, we've really progressed really fast here. It's just been a perfect, beautiful fall. And as we've talked before, grains coming out dry, corn, you just don't hear of any dryers running.
You know, what a tale of 2 years when you've got last year. I remember we were just watching the GDUs to see, are we even going to make black layer? And we've got wet beans in the field that we've got to take too wet. We were so happy to talk to you about bin fan controls last year because we had all this wet stuff. Well, now we got dry grain. How's it working for the guys that have harvested some of the 8-9% moisture soybeans or the 12% moisture corn, trying to add a little bit of moisture back in?
But one of the things that I kind of joke that that's one of the projects I'm working on right now, I'm helping people pull money right out of the air. In terms of those soybeans, although I will say that the weather has been not highly cooperative with nice moisture contents in the air, But there are some people out there working on it. We've figured out a what we're calling a spear. So if you don't have, excuse me, I'm standing in my workshop and the air compressor just went off. I get away from that.
That's real life, Tony. That's just real life.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would venture to guess several people listening to the show today are probably in the same situation. They're out in their shop or around equipment, and you just never know when stuff's going to start making noise.
Yeah, that's right. That's still going in the background. But anyway, for people who've got beans in their bins, we've made a designed, we're not marketing, I'm just showing them how to do it, a spear that cut a hole in the bulkhead door down there. You go through the man door and then the bulkhead door that holds grain back. Drill a hole, shove this. We've got a lower probe. Put one in the top and then link that with the monitors and the fan control. And where they were thinking the stuff was in the bin and they were done, here's a system that we can go out and still hydrate that and accurately tell what's going on. So we're just looking now for the weather to kind of cooperate with us and give us a little more time to get this stuff done before freeze up. And I think we'll get it here in November yet.
Yeah, I think it would be fun having a film crew just following you around, Tony, just to see all the things you're experimenting with and all the guys that you get to work with on their grain bins, working on grain quality. And I think we're talking to folks about a harvest update today and finding out, hey, am I done with harvest or I got a little more to go? And everybody's talking about, well, I got tillage or I got some weed control or I got some fence to fix or tiling to do. But I don't hear many farmers talking about, you know, I got to go check the bins again today and make sure everything's good. So I think it's just really good to have that chat a little bit about monitoring what's going on out there, because if you're not watching it, it can sure get away real fast.
Yeah, I can. And, you know, we're getting these variable temps here where it's, you know, people are asking, do we cool the stuff down? Where are we at? And some people have higher moistures. I've got one individual talk to me from over in Nebraska, corn, and he's talking about 20 to 26% moisture. Another guy in Ohio, same thing. Ohio's getting rain all the time. They can't even get in their fields right now. And I saw this hurricane is going to send some right up the river to them again. But surprising, even though we're sitting here and it seems pretty arid, people are talking about having high moisture. And then you start thinking about these variable temperatures. And what are they going to do with it to dry it down? That the individual who's got the high stuff in Nebraska, he's talking about natural air drying that down, which is, those are pretty lofty moistures to be messing with natural air to me.
Yeah, it's just another reason we love working with the Farm Shop MFG and using bin fan controls to take care of some of these things for us in our grain bins. If you want to learn some more about that, go to farmshopmfg.com. You can see what Tony's up to. Tony, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Look forward to talking to you again.
Hey, appreciate it. Have a great day. Thanks.
You too. Bye. Let's head out to Illinois. We got Jeff on with us. Jeff, how's the horseradish this year? How did 2020 treat horseradish crops?
Well, we're just getting ready to start horseradish harvest. We've finished up corn and soybeans and getting equipment put away, and we're getting stuff out for horseradish, getting that all ready to go. Grandpa's saying was harvest any month with an R, so we're right on target here. I mean, we could have done something September, October with that saying, but our norm is November, so we're on target to do that, and move forward on that. We've been getting rain the last couple days, but hopefully we've got some ground that's going to dry out and we can get started on harvest next week.
About any time we talk to you on the show, Jeff, we get some feedback from our listeners. Hey, does Jeff ever post anything online? Can we find you online anywhere? Do you post any pictures or videos of horseradish harvest?
No, I haven't ventured into that part of the technology yet. So
yeah, it's interesting.
We don't have anything.
I've gotten to be around a lot of crops at harvest time, and some of them have some pretty strong odors or some other things that make it really interesting. How about horseradish? Is that an interesting one to try and harvest?
So we're digging 10 to 12 inches deep. to get the roots out of the ground. So we're dealing with a lot of soil to sift through and try to get it cleaned up. And when I say clean, I don't mean pressure washer clean. I'm just saying get the chunks of dirt off. And then we get it into the shed, we need to cut the green tops off. So that's where it gets exciting, is you're breaking off the small roots for planting next year and trying to cut those green tops off. And that's where it can get hot in the shed on your eyes. And definitely, even when it's cold, we got ventilation fans running to suck some of that out of the building to keep fresh air on the employees, to keep everybody where they can see what they're doing.
I know, it just sounds interesting. I mean, it makes me want to have maybe a steak or something like that. I don't know. How about you? Do you have to celebrate them by using a lot?
Don't limit yourself on that. You can eat horseradish at every meal, and it's not just a condiment, it's also an ingredient. So,
well, I know this, when it's fresh, that's when it's really strong too. And that's when it's at its peak. So what do you have for a fresh market for the horseradish?
We sell what they call wild root, which is a mixture of all the big roots and small roots all together. And, we market that by the semi-load pallet, 1,200 pounds on a pallet, shrink wrapped, in a refrigerated trailer, and we ship that to. We've got a buyer in Wisconsin and Ohio, and then we go out east, New York and Maryland. So that's. We don't do much fresh market. We've got a few people that will pick up a few small, few roots now and then, but
we don't
do much of the fresh market. Yep.
That's very interesting. And, you know, you think about all the different crops out there. Somebody is raising horseradish. That somebody is Jeff in Illinois. And, yeah, Jeff, thinking about you guys this harvest season, I hope it's a great crop for you this year.
Yep, we had this moisture moving in now is really going to help bulk up the roots, that it'll grow all winter long as well. So we'll get... We hope to have half our harvest done by New Year's and continue on into the spring.
Excellent. Well, you'll get your harvest done in the month that ends in R then. Hey, thanks, Jeff. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise seed selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the End Zone from Farm Shop MFG.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
It's about time.
Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today, getting a harvest update and taking your agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head out to Oregon. We've got Bill with us right now. Bill, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
So I understand you want to talk a little about soil testing today.
Well, I was watching the program about soil testing, and we did a little regional. We're farming a couple of pieces that haven't been farmed in, gosh, a long, long, long time, maybe 50 years, and it's really out of the box stuff that it's not flat land. It's kind of rolling hills, and we're mostly a livestock producer. But what we've decided to do over the last 5 or 6 years is to really concentrate on soil fertility and redoing a lot of these fields and pastures. And so we put a really off the wall seed mix in and trying to take advantage of what we have, a low soil pH but a very high organic matter. So we're wanting to get plants that will fix nitrogen and really, you know, keep our costs down per acre of trying to amend the soil.
Yeah, the challenge, Bill, is when you've got low pH, nutrients are a little more available once you start getting into the sixes, but certainly there are some crops that can do okay in that lower pH. It's just we end up talking to a lot of producers who want to raise things like alfalfa or barley. And I mean, there are certain crops where you want that pH up there. So yeah, it really depends on the crop that you're going to raise. But yeah, I know
we put a wild mix in, you guys. I almost hate to admit to it, but we put a perennial ryegrass, which is has a real high sugar. It's a variety called Crave.
Sure.
And we used a brassica called Paja, and then we used a clover that is a high nitrogen fixation, which is was called Balanza clover, and we mixed them, and it's been a really interesting. The seeds are up about an inch right now, and we're just starting to see it come about. But we did 50 acres of it like that, and then we're coming back and fertilizing with ag lime to put on it to bring up that pH, and then we're just going to see what happens.
Yeah, how low was the pH, by the way?
Well, it's about 4.75 to 5.2, depending upon where we, you know, at different segments of the field.
Sure.
We ranged between 4.75 and 5.2.
Yeah. Yep. We've certainly dealt with stuff like that before, too. And you just get some lime on it occasionally, and you'll bring that pH up, and the production will be just so much better, especially with that clover. But, you know, with really all three of your crops that you got out there, if you can, it'd be nice to have that pH just a little bit higher. What else did you have to do in terms of fertility? You said the organic matter was high, which we would expect if it hasn't been crop farmed in years and years and years, or tilled, I should say. So what else did you have to do fertility-wise?
Well, it was a little bit low on phosphorus and copper, and when we got the test back, I was really surprised that the copper levels were low. That we were low on phosphorus and low on potassium and copper, and so we added that in there, and we've kind of been working on our micronutrients as much as we can in some of these places that haven't been farmed for, you know, at least 50 years and maybe more.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I could expect the P and the K to be low, but yeah, the copper is kind of interesting, so I'm glad you brought that up. So anything else you had for questions of us, Bill? I mean, anything else you wanted to know on the soil testing side or just soil fertility in general?
Well, what we're trying to do, and I followed your examples of doing zone testing of,
sure,
of the soil, and,
yep,
and I think that really has been helpful. I have to tell you guys, you're a tremendous resource all over the country. I have all of your TV programs on my VCR so I can go back and watch them whenever I want. And then I really, it's very, very educational for me to give us kind of some tips on some of that stuff. And some of the old time ways that we're finding out over here is that top dressing lime is something that nobody 20 years ago, nobody said, hey, this just won't work. You got to till it in.
Yep.
And as much moisture as we get, top dressing now seems to be sort of the way to go for a lot of people. But
yeah.
I was wondering what you thought of that.
Yeah. Well, think about it for just a second with all these no-till guys out there. That's really all they can do because they choose not to do any tillage. And we have found that lime works fine there too. It just takes a little bit longer. And I guess the rainfall is really the key, number one. And number two, we were talking about it earlier in the show, the fineness of that lime, number two. So if you have more rain and you have better fineness, and obviously, of course, better heat or a longer growing season, you can get that lime down into the ground fairly soon. But yeah, we've done it on no-till ourselves even, and it does work. Like I say, it just takes a little bit more time. So when you talk top dress, my other concern would just be we got to make sure we don't way overdo it. So what I'm saying here is, if let's say you were going to till and you wanted to put on, just as an example, 6 tons of lime, I would go, okay, well, that might be quite a bit, but if you're tilling it into 6 or 8 or 9 inches deep, whatever, you've mixed it in a lot of soil. On the other hand, if you're going to top dress, you usually don't want to put on great big rates because now, at least in the top inch or two of soil, you're going to tie up some of the nutrients at least for just a little bit. So we usually will, I would say, spoon feed it a little bit more whenever we're top dressing. So we think about that a lot with guys like yourself that want to top dress or guys that would be in no-till where they're not going to work it in. But yeah, otherwise it's good practice.
But is there a rate? I don't get 4 tons of the acre is about my max.
Sure.
We have to, I think you have to say, well, how many dollars can you afford to spend on this acre?
Yep.
And so I look, 4 tons is about my max, but I'm usually as a rule, I'm usually around half that for my top dressing.
Good. Yes, that I was going to say, as soon as you said 4 tons, I'm like, ooh, that sounds like a lot to me. Now, it might be okay. Now, if you really wanted to prove this out, and I don't know if you want to go to the trouble of doing this, but if you really wanted to prove this out, what you could do is just, at least in a couple of spots, go in for the next about 3 years, so each year for 3 years, just take a couple spots. I'm not talking about lots of work or anything, but you could go in and you could test every, let's say, 2 inches. So in other words, you take a 0 to 2 inch test, you take a 2 to 4 inch, a 4 to 6 inch, and a 6 to 8 inch. And then you compare those. And here's where I'm going with this. If you put that 2 tons on and we realize, oh, wow, we took the top 2 inches and we went from a 5.2 pH all the way up to a 7.4, that's not real good. That tells me that we're putting too much lime on in one application. So that would be the, I'll just use the old style term, trial and error method of figuring out if you put too much on. That's how I would look at it. So if I wanted to test it, that's how I would do it.
That's a great idea, and we'll definitely do that because that makes perfect sense. What I did is when I first started with putting it top dressing, and everybody told me I couldn't do it. I took a strip in a of a field,
Yep.
And I put a 4-ton strip on.
Sure.
And then I tested that strip to find out, and I just visually, how long did it take for that that lime to visually disappear?
Yep. How long did it take?
So, well, it took, I put it on in October, and by Christmas, it was gone.
Oh, yeah, so not very long. And I'm sure you had a few inches of rain on it, right?
Yeah, I probably had 6 or 8 inches of rain on it in that period of time.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Our average rainfall is about 44, 45 inches, so we get quite a bit.
Yep, you do. We're half that. Hey, Bill, we got to run, but thanks a lot for the call. Good luck out there.
Hey, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks a lot. All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls and questions after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer amaranth and water hemp with Tough 5-EC. Manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5-EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, getting harvest updates. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got an agronomic question, you can call in as well at 844-44-AG-PHD. You got an interesting one here. We got Joel down in central Missouri. He wants to talk about aluminum. Joel, we don't get a lot of aluminum questions here, so we're kind of excited about it.
Well, I'm glad you are. Maybe you can steer me in the right direction. I'll give you a quick background here. No-till, 25 years, 4-crop rotation in 3 years. Rotation of Milo, and it goes to beans, wheat, take a cutting of clover hay off the next spring and back to Milo. We got into the cover crop thing about in 09. We put in 100 and replicated, over 108 replicated plots of different things. And we couldn't get these anti-ryegrass roots down more than about 16 inches. So we wanted to know why, so we made a 48-inch probe, a 2-inch core, cut it off into 8-inch sections, sent it to the Midwest lab and said, tell us everything you can about this. And what they found, and we did 3 cores, one in the fence line, one up in the field, and one where we had put on a ton of gyp about a year and a half prior to this. In the fence line, they found 138 parts per million of aluminum, and they thought there was something wrong with their equipment, so they ran it a second time. It came out the same way. Midwest said that 2.5, I think, to 3 parts per million of aluminum is toxic to root growth. That tells me why those roots weren't going down. Up in the field where we're being cropped, God forever, I guess, it jumped to 247. And over where we had put on a ton of gyp before that, we came to 3/10 of a part per million of aluminum. So the gyp washed the aluminum down, but we aren't seeing any increase in yields appreciably where we've done that treatment. Now, here in central Missouri, near in our immediate area, there were 5 firebreak plants at one time. And that clay they used is high in aluminum and I think silica, if I remember right. So my question is, what can we do? We kind of think we've rooted around in the pile here to find out what's going on, but we don't know what to do about it.
What's your soil pH, Joel?
I'm just looking at a test here. The lowest one I've got here is a 5. We go up to 6.8. We got one 7.4. So we're in the mid to high 6s, I guess, on most of them.
Okay. The reason why I asked that question is aluminum is way more available and causes far more problems in low pH soils. When you get the pH to 6 and above, that typically reduces the amount of aluminum that's actually getting into the plants. So, yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't recall a farmer ever sharing with me that they had as high as 247 parts per million of aluminum. That's a lot.
Let me give you another. We bought another farm 3 years ago.
Yep.
And we couldn't push that probe down more than 36 inches. The aluminum up there at the 3-foot level is 747. That's just unreal. And that tells me why we're drought. We're a clay pan soil. That tells me why we hurt for rain in July and August sometimes.
Sure.
What I was wanting was some deep roots, and that's where we went in and looked at this cover crop thing. Each year since 2009, we dig pits every year. We go out with a backhoe and dig some holes. And the only 2 crops we can see that go down on a high side of 40 inches, 42 inches maybe, are red clover roots and milo roots. Them nasty milo roots, they'll go down there. But anything else we've got here is shallow rooted.
Okay, so you said you're in a 4 crop rotation, milo, beans, by the way, was that soybeans?
Yes, sir.
Okay, soybeans, milo, soybeans, wheat, clover, hay.
Yes, sir.
So is there one of those crops that's especially bad or one that's especially good? I mean, have you found anything where you're getting some success out there?
We hit APHs every year. Our wheat yields can run 50 to 75.
Yep.
So I can't see we're hurting there. We've gone into an intensive wheat thing in the last couple of years where we're shooting for 100 bushel wheat.
Sure.
We've got into the 90s a couple times a week. We haven't busted that 100 number yet.
Yep. So any your soybeans okay for yield?
Yeah. Hell, these Illinois guys talking about 70, 80 bushel beans. Yeah, we consistently run 40 to 50s.
Okay. And let's see, on your, where you put the gypsum, you said that really reduced the amount of aluminum that there is there. And one of the things I would think about right away is just calcium that's in there. So the aluminum actually might still be there. It might just be tied up, might not be getting tested. I have a difficult time believing it would have leached down super quickly. But how long ago did you actually put that ton of gypsum on?
About 15 months prior to the time we did these cores. I'll give you some base saturation numbers on some calcium if you'd like.
Yep.
Here's one at 79.9. Yep. 40.8, 54.9, 64.3, 81.9.
Okay, wait a second. You said 70 on the one. Did you say 40 on the second one?
Yeah, it was 40.8.
Okay, so that must be your low pH ground.
And that is on an 8. That's in this same core.
Okay.
And that's at 8 to 16 inch level. It was 40.8. But at the 0.8 level, it was 79.9.
Okay, so that's part of what I assume here is going on here. When you're getting deeper into that soil, what you're finding is those aluminum levels are getting higher. At some point, it varies on where you're at. Might be 16 inches, 8 inches, might be 3 feet, kind of like you've said. So my assumption here is if you were to soil test at that level, you're going to find low pH. So the aluminum, the high aluminum and the low pH are to some degree correlating. And along with that, it's also high aluminum, low pH, low calcium. So
I understand here. I'm going to give you a number at the 32 to 40 inch level.
Sure.
32 to 40, that's number 4 here where I come across. We're going to look at a pH of 6.5.
Oh, that's not bad.
Buffer of 6.7.
Yep.
A CEC of 27.5.
So heavy, yep.
And a calcium of 58.2.
Okay, so how's the aluminum right there?
Well, that's where that high core was. Let's see if I can find it back for you real quickly. I don't know.
I do appreciate the fact, Joel, that you got a lot of data, so that part's good. Go ahead.
How about 41.9 on the aluminum, parts per million of aluminum?
Okay, so at least that got a lot lower than what you were talking to me earlier about with 138 or 247 as a couple of examples. But
yeah, the farther we got down, the less maybe washed it down.
Yep, it could be that. It could just be that we're getting that pH up. I mean, there are a number of factors that you got there. So yeah, all I know is it is a tremendous amount of aluminum. I will give you that. So the things that I typically would be talking about would be drain tile to make sure I can flush stuff out, making sure my pH is at least over 6. I want to make sure that calcium-based saturation percentage is 65 plus. And so I've already got my pH up, that means I've got to throw more gypsum out there. And we got to do something to try to move some of that aluminum out of the root zone. But a big factor with that is, do I have good drainage? And so when you talk to me about heavy soil, because that's what we're dealing with right there, 27.5 CEC, that is a heavy soil. And so my assumption here is we've got some poor drainage and we're not able to flush that out the way that we potentially could. So I'm just saying that's one of the things that I would at least consider is putting some tile in there. So hopefully we can flush that out. Now, also for anybody listening and you say, well, wait a second, Joel's just going to send his problem downstream and we're going to have all kinds of aluminum in the water. It's a tiny bit of aluminum, what we're really talking about in the grand scheme of things. You start flushing that out with trillions of gallons of water, it's not even going to be detectable. So I'm not that worried about that, and it's going to take lots of time for this to happen. But anyway, Joel, those are the things that I would probably consider. And then, again, it's just kind of trial and error in terms of what crops you can find that will grow there. But at least in your top 3 feet, it sounds like you're starting to flush more of that out, and you are getting some fairly decent yield. So that is a good sign to me, but I'd look at the drainage, I'd look at pH, and I would look at making sure my calcium is good, and hopefully that's going to solve a lot of your problem.
I appreciate your suggestions on this. The beauty part about this thing, I'm 79 years old. I may not have 10 corn crops under my belt anymore.
Well, we're going to hope that you get this thing fixed fairly soon. Hey, Joel, we got to run, but thanks a lot for calling in today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we got a lot of good feedback today, a lot of questions. We'll get to more of those questions coming up tomorrow as well. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.